hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads where bandits are. Catacombs and giant doors protect the chest that stores some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's a grand theft of Elder Scrolls, Simon's Quest with Toe and Earl, rocket shoes to Everclue, Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash a crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues. Download it. Subscribe to it. Rate it. Review it. Head on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. We're also on Spotify, so give us some spins. And what is that other one? X, yes. At My Control. Oh, not At My Control. Just My Control Issues is the handle. AMC, how you living?
Doing well, A-Dub. Sorry if there's noise going on outside, but it's a party. Not really. People are hanging out, though. I've been good. Just life's been... This has been a pretty chill week, I would say, after the last couple weeks where it was pretty eventful. This is... you know, our first like chill week before, you know, we're back into Thanksgiving mode. So next week we'll be doing Thanksgiving at Marissa's family. So there's going to be all that. And then after that, it'll be, we'll be full on Thanksgiving. And then next thing you know, we're getting a tree, setting up the house for Christmas, playing Mariah Carey and all that shit comes right back. And we're shopping for, you know, pajamas right now, Christmas pajamas. So, you know, we're about to lean in to the holiday season. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
You making space in that fridge for them sandwiches?
I can't wait. That oversized Costco pumpkin pie that we pick up because it's super affordable. But it's Costco, so it's obnoxiously huge. So you have to leave a lot of space for it. So yeah, I'm making room for leftovers, A-Dub.
That's what I'm talking about.
So this week I took off Monday and Tuesday, just had some days to take off, took that off, which is cool because it frees up Marissa to then go volunteer at Theo's school. She volunteers with like in his class. So that, you know, it's a compounded effect where I'm off. So I'm happy about that. That lets Marissa then go and volunteer for Theo's class. So then Theo's super happy to, you know, have his mom there while he's at school. And she's happy because she gets to, you know, see Theo in class with his classmates and, you know, all that, his interactions with the teacher, all that good stuff. So, and then Naomi, she loves it because then it becomes a daddy-daughter day. So it's just an all-around, like, great experience. I got to also then squeeze in, you know, the rare Tuesday workout. My schedule pretty much Saturday and Monday. Monday is my lightest day of the week, my lightest day of the work week. And I work from home on Mondays, so I always sneak in a workout when in the morning when there's nothing going on. Saturday is just like, you know, that's my weekend day, squeezing like an hour to get in a nice lift. But because I had Monday and Tuesday off, I went with that Saturday, Monday, Tuesday workout. So that was awesome. Get my protein in, get my workout.
Yes.
It was nice.
Yes.
I didn't really watch any TV shows this week, but I did watch, I finished up that My Hero, the Two Heroes movie.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
Yes. Seeing that young All Might in action.
Yeah. And I love how like everything always like comes back to, it was one for all, like, or not one for all for one who was behind all of this. Like,
dude, just scheming over arrows.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, this is gonna fuck over All Might. Okay, I'm in. He just fucking hates anybody with that ability, with that one for all ability. But I agree, he's a good hater because people are always hating on him. He's just trying to take all the power. Why can't
Yeah, he
why can't
just
he
wants to
just
be the supreme leader of the entire
yeah,
globe.
the end all be all. So what's wrong with that? He's a man with ambition. But yeah, it was a great movie. Loved it. It fell into all the themes of My Hero with Deku's ultimate drive to protect people alongside his need to, or not his need, but his responsibility and all that comes with One For All, keeping them secrets and holding up to the standard that All Might has set and all the previous One For All bearers have held. And so yeah, it was just great. I really enjoyed the movie, and I'll be now I can jump into My Hero Season 7, and hopefully I'll eventually try to find that movie that you watched. What was it called again? The one that you went to the theaters recently?
You're next.
You're next. Yeah, so I'll get to You're Next eventually. But yeah, it's been a good week, A-Dub. How has your week been?
Not too bad. We were told that we didn't have to go into the office this week, so it was pretty much a vacation. it's not a lot of work happening right now, so just pretty chill. All week, watched a metric ton of Hunter x Hunter. There was nothing really pulling me toward that show, but one of my anime homies was like, that's his favorite anime. So I was like, okay, well, on that, I'm going to go into the show. And I gotta say, MC, it's kind of dope. It's super dope. I'm loving it, man. It's basically about like this kid, and then you understand that people have these like their aura, their energy, and then you tap into that and all the mini techniques, the basics that you use. And then now they're combining the basics into more advanced techniques, and they're handling business. You want to try to become a hunter, you basically just get a license to do whatever you want and make money. And then it just goes from there. Like, I know I'm not doing it justice with my description, but I would recommend watching Hunter x Hunter. Watch a bunch of that. Arcane season 2 is out. There's a new episode I haven't watched yet. Still the best animation in the business. It's absolutely insane. Watched the Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight with the homie Ray a couple of days ago, and yeah, that was quite an evening. But I'm not going to spoil anything, even though the fight already happened. I'm sure everybody who wants to know knows the outcome. I would just say that I feel like everybody who paid money to be there to see that fight deserves a refund. Like, I've never been so disappointed by a boxing match in my life. Well, except that one time when Mike Tyson just basically just said, yeah, I was just trying to do this to beat my kids. And like, I understand that, sometimes it's like that. It's just hard to see, especially for such a superstar like that. And, look good coming back, training, putting out the videos, looking like old Mike. Maybe he just got a little too old. Maybe he got a little too timid. It seemed like he was thinking a lot. Like, I don't know what the stipulations or the rules were for the fight, and I'm not going to go any further on it. But
Well, I know like
personally, I just wish we could have saw something better.
the fight was I remember the fight was postponed too, because it's supposed to happen, I think, during the summer.
Yeah, I
And
think
Mike
Mike
like
injured
had,
himself.
yeah, he had some like health and like a health issue, like not even like, oh, I pulled a muscle,
Oh, yeah.
like had like a health issue during the training camp. And so part of me wonders if like some of that was still lingering, or just in general like age. Like it's just like
Yeah.
during the training camp he just realized like, oh, some things aren't working the way they're supposed to be, and now I just need to get through this fight so I can get this payday. And that's kind of like that results in the product that you end up getting.
I mean, he is 57, so I
yeah
didn't
yeah
that's the information that I wasn't operating with. So I don't think it would have changed my expectations, but at the same token, like you kind of understand. Like, 57 years old and they're trying to fight what is basically a kid, just some dude half your age.
Yeah, the worry was that like it was just gonna be a full on like execution of an old man for a bloodthirsty public or viewing audience. And so at least from the results I heard, at least he didn't he walked out of there. So that's at least that didn't happen, because that was the scare, was like, oh, Mike is just gonna go out there and just get brutalized in his old age, and it's just gonna be sad for everybody to watch. Which it still ended up, I guess, being a little sad, but it didn't, it wasn't him getting brutalized, I'll say.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. It's a thing that happened now. So that's cool. Let's see. Did absolutely nothing over the weekend. I'm going to try to get a car wash today. But yeah, man, that's about it. Just looking forward to this coming week. These last few releases that are going to sneak in, Game Awards coming up, so we can start to look forward to what's coming in the following year. And yeah, good times.
All right, AW, you mentioned Game Awards. You mentioned video games, so let's talk about it. What have you been playing this week?
All right, so I'm pretty sure I told you guys last week that I got back into the Mass Effect Legendary Edition. So,
Nice.
just been nicking and scratching at that, really just trying to get through Mass Effect 1 while at the same time rediscovering everything I loved about it. Just trying to navigate up mountain ranges with the Mako is something else. You don't realize how not good it was until you play it again. It was good at the time. It's still good now, but it's like we could do better than that. But it's still awesome. I love it. And yeah, so just been nicking and scratching at that. But then it occurred to me that Loop Hero may have come to Xbox. So I went to the store. There it was. I bought it, and I'm having an absolute blast with it. It's crazy. Like, it's every now and then you find those games where it seems like they were designed specifically for you. And I feel like Loop Hero is that kind of thing. So it's a game where these beings destroyed all of reality, but somehow you survived and you can rebuild parts of the world from your memory. I mean, that's the story. I don't know if that's actually what you're doing, but yeah. So what happens is you go into the game, there's this loop of land, and it's got some turns in it, 90 degree turns and corners and things like that. So it's never the same every time. And your little character's going around this loop. It has a day cycle, and every day that passes, like, monsters spawn, things are produced, and you're going around, you're getting cards. It's got a deck building aspect where you're using these cards to fill in the black space that's around the loop. So you're putting in mountains, rocks, trees, desert, meadows, like all these things. And each of these different tiles gives your character additional stats and buffs that help with going through the subsequent loops, because enemies are getting stronger in each loop. And as you place certain tiles, that's going to create areas where enemies are produced. As you build, other hazards and things pop up, like goblin camps, bandit camps, cigarettes, all kinds of stuff. So it's like there's a big risk reward element to it, where in order for you to continue to get greater benefit, you have to continue to take on greater challenges. You build towns and things that help you heal. So, there's a lot of things that work for you as well as against you. I've made it up to chapter two so far, and like, you're going around the loop, you're killing enemies, you're getting loot, you're constantly upgrading, you're picking your stats. It's all randomized. It seems to have like a rarity tiers, like common, rare, uncommon, common, uncommon, legendary. So yeah, you're getting loot, you're picking perks as you level up, you're learning how to utilize the cards to your benefit, so that eventually, as you build the world up, it draws the attention of the boss. And then you have the choice. You can either go back to your camp with all your supplies, or you can take on the boss. If you win, you can keep doing loops, or you can leave. But if you perish, then you only get a portion of your loot, unless you got some resurrects and stuff, or maybe you have some of the special currency you get in the post-boss loops that allows you to take everything that you would have lost if you just trade those. So there's even a benefit to playing after the boss. But yeah, man, I've been playing this game, and it's because it's an auto battler, because it's doing a lot of things itself, and you're just making decisions along the way. It's the kind of game you can have just on. And while I'm doing other things, like, checking my emails, doing some work, like, oh, let me get a loop in, up, up, you go back to it. So it's cool. You don't have to be fully engaged with it, but for as little engagement as you need with it directly, it holds your attention completely. So yeah, man, I've just been having a blast with that. I'm looking forward to pushing further. I'm only on chapter two right now. It didn't take me long to beat the first level, second level, the bosses. I still haven't figured out that recipe, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to push further, unlock new cards, see all the new synergies and effects and hidden effects, new enemy types, hopefully see some new loot. Having a blast. So yeah. AMC, what have you been playing?
Yeah, a couple games, a dub. Three games, I would say. Yeah, three games this week. I'll start off with the first one, the OG one that I've been playing for about a month now, that being Diablo 4. Still pushing through Torment 1. Really just figuring out this, slowly, incrementally trying to figure out ways to improve my Werebear build. And one of the things that I found this week that added a huge boost to, I guess, not the amount of damage, but the how many people I can affect with my damage is what I'll say. Because the thing with the Werebear is he does a ton of damage, but if you don't have a big area of effect, he's kind of just fucking up the dudes that are right around him. And so they and he's not very agile, so you're not really jumping around the map teleporting unless you get those runes maybe going. And so yeah, I was trying to figure out ways that I can just damage more people with each attack. And the thing that I landed on is one of his aspects that I can add through the Codex of Power that can imprint. It adds a wave of damage on his pulverize attack, and the pulverize is his core ability, and it's a slam that he does. And with the slam, you can add certain stats on it that enable it to guarantee overpower damage, I think every 12 seconds. And then on top of that, you get other stats that then guarantee overpower damage every 12 seconds. So you can kind of stack those overpower damages to get a couple in succession as opposed to waiting every 12 seconds. And so with that, I was getting a ton of damage with the pulverize, but I can only hurt the people that were right around me. And so the aspect that I added on creates a wave. And so initially, I wasn't really using that one because it was sub 100% damage in the wave. So I didn't like the fact that there was a damage drop off with that. Well, I upgraded the aspect enough now where it's doing over 100% damage. So it's actually now stronger than if enemies were, say, closer to me. I guess that's how it works. And it's absolutely awesome because now I'm just sending out just waves of damage. And because it's overpower, it's just a wave of like a sea of blue numbers just go across the screen every time I do a pulverize attack. And it just clears out a bunch of dudes, which is super helpful for something like the pit where I'm trying to just kill as much as efficiently as possible to just get to that, what, that pit lord, that pit boss. And so I'm pushing through that a lot quicker. And so that was a big thing that I was really enjoying as I was experimenting with my build. But didn't really do much more than that in Diablo 4 because your boy was having a desire to, at this point in Diablo, I'm really just focused on like leveling, getting equipment. So there's not a lot of narrative going. There's no narrative really going on at this point. Pushing through the seasonal journey stuff. And so I was craving a little bit of story. And so because of that, wanting that narrative, I decided to jump back into Space Marine 2, which was a great choice. It's a game that I was absolutely loving, but Diablo Vessel of Hatred came out in October. And so I completely just dropped that for Diablo in order to just put my focus there in my new Werebear class and all that stuff. And so now I had a desire to jump back into Space Marine 2. And it's fun because I'm reading a Warhammer book right now. And that's really what got the itch going. Cause I was like, I just reading about it. I'm like, oh, this is so damn good. Like, I just want to play the game now. Hop back in, and it was actually a perfect point to jump in the game because in the game you start out, you're fighting these waves of Tyranids, which are kind of like the Zerg if you played Starfield or the Bugs and Starship Troopers. They're very much like that group. They have a hive mind. They all work around that, kind of like ants. And so that works for the Horde system that Space Marine 2 was kind of built around. But when you're reading about Warhammer, at least what I'm reading in the Horus Heresy, it's very focused on the Astartes, which are basically like the Space Marines, the improved humans, we'll say. And it's really focused around them and then their engagement with Chaos and then the influence of Chaos and how it ends up like corrupting certain legions under the Emperor. So under corrupting certain Primarchs and their legions that are under the Emperor to the point where they turn on the Emperor. And so, yeah, you like I'm learning about how that all kind of comes into play because the Horus Heresy basically is what leads into 40K. And where I'm at in the game, I'm fighting these Tyranids, and out of nowhere, the Chaos Marines start showing up. So I'm like, oh shit, here we go. And I'm so early in the pre-story of Warhammer. I still don't fully know which Primarchs end up, you know, just going down that rabbit hole of Chaos. And the Primarchs are the sons of the Emperor. He basically genetically created them. He loses contact with them through the work of the Dark Lords, and so they get raised in their own separate areas just around the galaxy. An Emperor basically goes and he finds all his sons, all the Primarchs, brings them all together. They go on this conquest. Eventually, the Emperor steps aside, and through that, he pushes Horus to the leader, makes him the War Master. Horus ends up, you know, getting corrupted by Chaos, and then through that he recruits some of his brothers. And so yeah, you have these Chaos factions versus, you know, the followers of the Emperor. So I love reading about that in the lore, in the books, and learning about all that, but I wasn't coming across that because you're just fighting these bugs all the time. And as you play the game more and more, you start learning more about the Chaos and how that's influencing the storyline. And then they introduce the Space Marines. So now I'm fighting Space Marines. So that's absolutely awesome. And through that, I'm kind of learning about, there's one Primarch that I thought, you know, they kind of tease that, you know, he might be on the good side. I don't know if there is really a good side in Warhammer. Like, it's just a complete dystopian galaxy that is just war torn. Everybody's just fighting and killing each other. The Xenos are filth, and you know, but it's all out of the purity of trying to stay away from Chaos. And so yeah, through that, as I'm fighting against one of these factions in the game, I learned that the Primarch that I thought might have sided with Emperor definitely does not side with Emperor. It goes full on Chaos. And so it's kind of cool to see, you know, his units and what becomes of them. Also, the fact that, like, where I was reading in the book right now, there's in the book, one of the Primarchs that I'm reading about is getting corrupted through the entire story. And basically, his legion sets up a whole, they visit a temple, they go to the temple, they come in contact with, you know, this dark religion. Slowly, the people of that faction and the Primarch get corrupted to that, you know, dark cult. And then they put on this big performance. And during the performance, it just starts making people go crazy. They start changing. Some people like start developing like animal heads, you know, like that whole like pagan thing where it's like a bull head with a man body. And so anyways, as I'm playing the game and I'm fighting these Chaos Marines, they start calling in their homies, and these dudes who have goat heads but human bodies start coming through the portals, and I'm fighting them. So what's kind of cool, the synergy there, is that as I'm reading and learning about how that all comes about, I'm just fighting these groups within the game. So it's bringing that all to life, which is exactly what I wanted from playing Space Marine 2. So not only am I just enjoying the game, but now the fact that I'm reading the book as I'm playing the game is just, you know, adding this whole other level to the experience that, you know, I don't want to take for granted as I'm going through it. The other game I'm playing, Stardew Valley. As I mentioned last week, we got the 1.6 update on console, which is all the new content that Concerned Ape had dropped on PC a little bit ago, but had, you know, it took them a while to get that all ported to console and the mobile. And so yeah, they dropped it last week. We played the they dropped it 2 weeks ago. We started playing it. At this point now, we pushed through spring. And with that, you know, it's when you first start the game, you have your farm, you're clearing out trees and rocks. And that you can eventually get to a point where you have to upgrade your equipment to clear out some of the hardwood and the bigger boulders. So you're really just collecting resources, trying to make the little money that you can through fishing and what crops you can afford to buy seeds for and grow at the moment. And you upgrade your equipment, and then you start clearing out like the mahogany trees and the boulders and things like that. And so at this point now, we're in the summer. What's great is that we now know the tricks of the trade. So we're already like, there's all these options of different summer vegetables and fruits that we can plant. But we're just like, no, we're going right for the blueberries, all blueberries. That's all we care about. Because
Nice.
the thing with blueberries, the thing with blueberries is that when you plant them, they when they mature, they get their fruit, but then you don't have to you don't have to harvest the entire bush and then replant the blueberry bush. The bush just stays there, and then it's just constantly producing fruit once it fully matures. So it just cuts out that loop of, having to harvest, go to the store, buy a bunch of seeds, come back, dig hoe the ground again, replant the seeds,
Oh,
reapply the fertilizer, all that
damn.
stuff. And so
Damn.
yeah, it makes all of that now passive with the blueberries, and it still produces a great amount of income from that fruit. And then so that allows us then to focus on things like the mines, cutting down trees, and all the other stuff that's going on in the world. We did come across our first new event that was added in the 1.6 update. Out of nowhere, while we're playing, we wake up one day and it's raining, which it rains in the game normally, but it's green rain. Like, what the fuck is going
What?
on? It's green outside. We notice that there's all these like bushes, there's all these trees around now. Some are just like covered in this like green like funk is what I'll say. What I later learned is that green is moss, so it's now a new item. Or a new resource that we can get in the game, moss. And so what we did learn is that I guess when you have trees, if you don't cut the trees down, even you leave them up, after a certain amount of days, they'll start to develop moss. You can remove the moss from the tree, and then that moss can be used in other things like building deluxe bait for fishing and stuff like that. And so it started with
Deluxe bait.
Exactly. There's only the regular bait and pre 1.6 update. So yeah, we got the deluxe bait. But what's great is, yeah, so there's these trees with moss on them. There's all these bushes. What we realized through the entire process was that every tree that I'd been walking around the world as I was playing the game and just planting like, acorn seeds, maple seeds, whatever the other seed is, just throughout the world, because we need a ton of wood early on in the game. And but it takes like a season, I think, for a lot of trees to fully to mature. Well, after this rain event, every tree that I planted was fully mature. So there's just all
Damn.
these trees just littered around the world. So that was absolutely awesome. What was cool too is there's new character dialogue in that event. Like, we find that, like, as you wake up and you see that there's green rain, there's you have mail and it says, hey, if you feel like if you're worried about this event that's happening right now, this cataclysmic event, we're all meeting at the saloon. You can go to the saloon, and the majority of the town villagers are at the saloon with new dialogue options. They're all hiding out. They're all like, just giving a little bit more of their
Scared,
personality. Or you say, oh yeah, all scared. Yeah, a couple of the
just
people were having it.
frightened.
Yeah. So yeah, that was cool. So me and Marissa were just absolutely happy. It was just like, as I'm playing through it, just recognizing that another just reminder of how this is just an S-tier girlfriend game. As we're going through it, the smiles on her faces, like the intrigue, the new sense of discovery with all the stuff that Concerned Ape added with the 1.6 update to Stardew Valley. It's not an entirely new experience, but it feels fresh, is what I'll say. And that's great for a game that already has so much content. For them to be able to find a way to make it feel like new again, that's awesome. That's pretty much all I've been playing, Ado, because those games are everything. They're more than enough.
So I
But
got
that's
a
it.
question
Yes,
then.
what you got?
Does Stardew Valley have some kind of like endpoint or ultimate objective? Like, is because you talk about working your way through the seasons, and I'm wondering how
So
do
there
you just
are.
go through like a year or something, or is there a story? Like, where how do you trigger the credits in the game?
So to trigger the credits, damn, I wish I fully remembered, because we did do that. So there's kind of like there's one story where when you first start out, you're working at like this corporation called Joja Corporation. Then you get the deed to your grandfather's farm. You go there, and then you're building up the farm. And as you slowly learn, there's a community center. And so one of the things you can do is you can focus on building up the community center. And so there's a whole route of quest items that you can do to build up the community center. And when you get to that point, then you have a choice of if you want to support the Joja industry, or if you want to support the local industry, which is this dude Pierre. He's basically the only grocer in town, and so you get to choose, do you want to support the corporation or Pierre? And then through that, like, it'll add some, I guess, extra content. But then, now here's the part I don't remember exactly. I don't know if you have to play 3 years or if there's something you have to do, but we did eventually hit a point where you roll credits, you hit this summit, and you kind of have this moment where you're reflective on like everything that you've done. And then that's the official end of the game. I just can't remember exactly what you needed to do to get to that point. I want to say it's like you play through 3 years and you have to hit like a certain criteria, but I've already forgotten how to get there. But there is a somewhat endpoint, but it's one of those things like you do that, you hit the summit, you roll credits, but then you can keep moving on with your farm after that. And there are still some like other objectives. Like I think there's a clock that you have to buy for, I think, like 10 million. So like there's a goal to get basically $10 million to buy this clock, and then you can put it. It's a gold clock that you can put like in the center of your village, and it's kind of like a centerpiece that's on display.
Did you get it?
Yeah, of course we did. Yeah. We wanted to get as close as we could to platinum. And so to get platinum in the game, we just have to go through the. So the first time we played through, we ended up helping out Pierre, which is the local industry. And so this time we're going to help out the corporation, and through that, then we'll be able to get the platinum trophy. So we'll see. And in the update to 1.6, Concerned Ape did say that they added in new in-game content for the Joja Mart route to entice people to go that way. So that will be all entirely new as well once we go through that. So there's still some stuff to experience with this way that we're playing the game. Yeah, absolutely love it. It's a great game. But you know what, A-Dub, let's take a break and then we'll come back with our first topic of the week.
Top topic of the week.
We are back, A-Dub. Would you lead us off with the first topic of the week?
Top topic of the week.
Week.
Well, it was a pretty quiet news week, considering the tumult and the uproar and the ruckus that was the past few months.
Ruckus.
You know, really, really scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but I got a little something for you. A little interesting news. We're going to give you some interesting topics that just happen to stand out from the rest of things. So, IGN reporting, you'll be able to buy Obsidian's RPG Avowed with World of Warcraft gold.
What?
So let's see what's going on. Avowed coming out February 18th. Everybody already knows that, but here's how this whole thing is going to work. So it's the Battle.net launch that's of most interest here, because it means you'll be able to buy the game with World of Warcraft gold. World of Warcraft tokens can be exchanged for Battle.net balance, not just game time, which means players can indirectly buy anything Blizzard sells for real world money with in-game gold. Players can buy a World of Warcraft token from Blizzard for $20 and either keep it for later or put it on the in-game auction house. Another player will hopefully buy that token from the auction house for in-game gold, then exchange it for $15 of Battle.net balance. Battle.net balance can then be used to buy anything Blizzard sells for World of Warcraft for real-world money, including video games. So, at the time of this publication, a World of Warcraft token is about 262,000 gold. So at its cheapest, Avowed being $70 means you'll need about 5 World of Warcraft tokens to exchange for enough Battle.net balance to buy the game, which equates to about 1.3 million gold. Very interesting to me. AMC, how do you feel about this possibly opening the door to gamers being able to buy games with currencies that they earn in other games?
I'm having it. I feel like in general, just the way the internet's gone, where there's kind of just been this, hey, for your data, like we'll give you internet. And then, but the problem is now it's gotten to a point where it's like, we want your data and we're going to charge you, like, on top of that for like a subscription. Mm-hmm. It's just like, wait, so not only are you just taking all my shit, but now you're charging me on top of that and making money off of all of it. So yeah, there's a part of me that's like, Not that it's messed up necessarily, but I do like the idea of like rewarding people for engaging with your product in this type of way. And so yeah, it's like, hey, you're playing World of Warcraft, you're collecting these resources, you fuck with the auction house, you might get some money, and now you can use that to we'll take that synergy and we'll take that in-game currency to be able to buy an actual video game, a real life product. So I think that's I actually really enjoy that. I don't know what the how long it takes for somebody to build up those resources, but I don't mind it. Something that you can do if you can do it somewhat passively just through playing the game, and not necessarily you're just farming off that those resources so that you can then buy a video game. I'm here for it. I have no problem with it at all. What do you think about this, Adub?
I think it's interesting. I support it, man. It's we're spending significant portions of our lives. Like we were talking about it last week. I have 1,000 hours in Diablo 4 already.
Yes.
So it's like if there was some kind of real world trade that could happen where I could use my like whatever I earned in my time, my gold or some other rare resource or something like that to exchange, not just for stuff in the Diablo 4 shop, but stuff, across Blizzard products. I think, with the way that companies are trying to really lean into engagement and, monthly active users and all that kind of stuff, it would make the absolute most sense if the currencies and things that you earned within the games could be exchanged for other games or other things beyond just what's in that game's ecosystem. So I think it's something that should be embraced a bit more. Of course, like Microsoft has their rewards program, Sony has the PlayStation Stars program, but with what's going on here, with being able to play in World of Warcraft and buy a game just because it's on Battle.net, I think that's a strong step in the right direction. Like if I could, like I said, if I could take my Diablo gold and do the same thing, or if I could, play Control, or if I could play GTA, like if you want me to spend my every waking hour playing your game, you got to give me something back in exchange for those hours. Because granted, if I spend that long in a game, it's because I enjoy it, and that is the payback. But times are changing, so are our values. Pitching on a party or something like. Kick something back to me. Yeah, so I fully support this. I hope we see it in more games. Hope we see it across more platforms. So yeah, that's pretty awesome. But AMC, you got our next topic of the week. Topic of
Topic
the
of the
week.
week. Yes, this one, so it's interesting. It's actually a Bloomberg story, but I'm getting it from TechSpot because Bloomberg has a subscription, and so it's unfortunate. But yeah, I gotta pull it from
It's
another article.
unfortunate.
So I gotta pull it from another way. The only reason I say unfortunate is because I was listening to there was like some company, I don't know if it was like Kotaku or whatever, but they had like a like they had some layoffs with like some of their writers. And one of the things I heard attributed to it is just, people don't have to, you write an article hoping that people will then come to your website and then you get that ad traffic from people visiting. But now that like, but now with one with Google, the fact that you can just like look up something and it'll just give you like just a blurb from the article and you can just take that information. But also just other sites will just be like reported by Kotaku and then here's all their information. So like somebody doesn't have to necessarily go to the source, so then they don't get the credit necessarily that they're hoping for the article from a monetary standpoint. They might get the credit as far as citation, but people aren't visiting their website. That's the reason why I say unfortunate not going directly to Bloomberg. But as I said, don't have a subscription and I'm not paying for a Bloomberg subscription, at least at this point. So
Got to
this
have
article,
standards.
yeah, exactly. So this article, Microsoft confirms it's working on a handheld, but it's years away. So this is coming from TechSpot. So during a lengthy interview with Bloomberg, Xbox head Phil Spencer confirmed Microsoft has begun developing a handheld gaming system. However, prospective customers shouldn't expect one to appear for at least a few years.
All
Spencer
right.
explained that the project is in the prototype phase. Microsoft is still exploring the potential capabilities of a handheld and what markets it might serve. The evaporating, oh yeah. And then from here, they get into, first party exclusive games, and will they be multi-platform and all that stuff. So here we go with that. The evaporating exclusivity of the company's in-house games is another controversial topic in the interview touched on. Earlier this year, Microsoft released games like Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment, and Sea of Thieves for PlayStation and Nintendo platforms. Further, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle will come to PlayStation 5 early next year, following a December release on Xbox and PC. In February, Spencer described the ports as a one-off experiment. However, yeah, Microsoft appears to be satisfied with the results. As Spencer told Bloomberg this week, that none of the company's properties are off the table regarding conversions to non-Microsoft platforms. Let's see.
Not to
And
get
then,
Starfield on PlayStation. Playing with the DualSense Edge.
exactly. And then, as far as acquisitions, the interview also covered Microsoft's growing list of acquisitions, such as the historic $69 billion purchase of Call of Duty publisher Activision Blizzard. Spencer confirmed that the company's shopping spree isn't over, indicating the agreements that broaden Microsoft's geographic diversity could be attractive. So we got a lot there covered in that Bloomberg interview. He also did another interview, which I pulled some information for if you want to hit it before me. But yeah, so A-Dub, what do you think about this? At least confirmation that Microsoft is in the early phases of developing a handheld. And then we can get into all those other topics as far as, once again, games coming over the PlayStation and acquiring other studios. But the big one being the handheld. What do you think about Microsoft considering doing a handheld in the future?
Well, then that there, oh man, it's like, damn, like it's a good move. Like, I'm trying to say that, but in a more articulate manner. It's that, Nintendo showed that it works. Steam Deck showed that PCs could enter that space with the same form function and achieve somewhat similar success. And then Xbox, like, that's gonna. I'm not going to say it's going to take them out of competition with PlayStation. It's just going to put them back in competition with Nintendo. Like, they're taking on more competitors in that regard. And that's another market where they're coming in at second place by default. And, I don't know. But the handheld is a good move. Like, the success of the Steam Deck pretty much confirms that. And it shows that it works. It shows that it can work well. It shows that it can resonate with audiences. And there's no reason why a Sony or a Microsoft shouldn't be in that game at this point in time. Sony was already there with the PSP and the Go and the Vita, but maybe they were just a little too ahead of their time with that. Like, handhelds have been around forever, but insofar as like console gaming on a handheld, like, this is all still new territory in a way. Like, we got the Switch, and now we got the Steam Deck. So now we've seen that, like, it's not just like they should, like, Nintendo demonstrated on the first party level that it could work, and then Steam Deck demonstrates that on the third party level it can work. So I'm looking forward to the handheld futures. I don't know if I would get one myself. It's interesting. It just depends on what's going on at the time. I feel like
It's kind of a
maybe,
lifestyle thing.
yeah, and like I'm of the lifestyle where I just want the graphic. Give me the graphics card. Give me the GPU. Like, I want
Maybe if a dub, you continue this globetrotting trend, you'll have a
exactly,
handheld to bring with you.
exactly. And the Xbox handheld might be the answer. Well, in that case, I mean, I'll probably just go with the Steam Deck. Because then I'd have the PC, have the Steam Deck, don't have to worry about saves transferring and, all that cross saving and cross buying, just have everything on the same platforms with
That
two
tweaking and
different.
twerking.
No, well, that's all tweaking. It's working. But yeah, man, it's interesting. I do get like excited at the idea of how they would bring their spin to these kind of devices, like, because you can't just come in the market with the same shit that everybody else got trying to sell off your brand. Like, granted, they have the games to prop up a new entrant into the tournament, but they're still gonna have to, damn, like, I don't know, maybe quick resume can continue to evolve and have that on a handheld where just your game starts right back up even after you turn it off. Like, I don't know, maybe quick resume could be the differentiating factor there. So what else do you think, Mayor?
Yeah, you bring up a good point with the Steam Deck, and I would hope that they would go more towards that route, because they do mention throughout the article the growing trend of the PC handhelds. They mention Steam Deck, the ROG Ally, the Asus ROG Ally, and all that stuff. And yeah, like when I look at it, so when I first think of, you know, there's the Switch, but the OG one that I think of when it came to like trying to do a console in a handheld space, that was kind of what I thought the PlayStation Portable was going to be. It ended up just being like purely a portable device where it had like its own separate games. It wasn't playing like the console PlayStation games. It was like, you know, they were making their own, what is it, Uncharted game for the PlayStation Portable, and then like other games, but it wasn't, you weren't necessarily playing console games. It just had console characters on the games for the handheld device. And so I would hope that one place, the Xbox, would focus on console games. And then also with the caveat that it was closer to the PC style of handheld, where you can do other things outside of just purely being an Xbox device. And so with that, like, it'd be more in line with maybe the PC Game Pass as opposed to the console Game Pass when it comes to what they have natively on the console. And what I guess the advantage that it does have is that if it's an Xbox console, you can have your games directly on there. I think with the ROG Ally, it's made to use the Game Pass, but once again, you can only have Game Pass games on there. It's not like you're buying, maybe, I don't know, if you can buy games through the Microsoft Store and have them natively on your ROG Ally or Steam Deck. I'm not sure if that's set up.
Interesting.
Yeah, so if that isn't set up, that would be the kind of differentiating factor, that those are more like Game Pass devices, whereas this could be an actual console device with Game Pass, but also having PC, you know, options within it. And so, yeah, I would hope that they would do something like that and make it, as they said, they want to try to find the value for the customers. And so, yeah, if they can do something like that to make it a little bit bigger than just a handheld, but also still being very much an Xbox device, that would be the move that I think that would even more entice me to get it. Because, you know, I'm already a shoe-in for the Switch 2 when that comes. And so now, yes, I would need another reason to get an Xbox. And I mean, from my perspective, I got the PlayStation on my TV, so I would be more inclined to get an Xbox handheld as opposed to having another, you know, big console within the living room. I would be curious to see if they would allow some type of capability to connect your Xbox console to the TV, so you can have, you know, that Switch portability where you're playing on the TV and on the console. So those are things I would be looking for, so that it would feel more like a console as opposed to just purely a handheld device. And so, yeah, those are those little details that if they're all there, then I'm definitely leaning more towards it. And then obviously it'll be price, but little things I'd be looking for in an Xbox handheld device to get me over there. And, you know, just having that capability of taking it with me wherever I go. I often romanticize about, like, so, like, you know, being married, it isn't the greatest thing to, like, you know, a couple nights in a row to be like, hey, I'm not going to bed with you because I am going to stay downstairs and play Diablo or whatever. That's where, you know, buying that PlayStation Portable device, I forgot what it's called already.
Portal.
Yeah, PlayStation Portal. Having that would be effective, so I can just bring it into the bed, play that. But yeah, having an Xbox console, I could, in my handheld, I could just bring that upstairs with me and have that as an option. And so those are things that, from, you know, being married and, you know, wanting to stay connected and not, like, you know, confined to certain areas of the house to be able to game, those are those things that would unlock that. And, you know, would be little quality of life things that I think the handheld could provide for somebody like me. So those are the things I would be looking for with an Xbox handheld.
I see.
A-Dub, you want to take us into the next topic of the week?
Topic of the week? This was an interesting one. I haven't partaken myself, but this concerns us both. and so many more. Overwatch Classic was at one point announced, is now out. New mode returning to original 21 Heroes from 2016 release for 3 weeks. Yes, the Nostalgia mode, which launches Tuesday and continues over the course of 3 weeks, will feature key moments from Overwatch history, Blizzard says. It'll begin with the original 1.0 version from launch, with no limits on which characters you can pick, meaning you can theoretically have a team full of tanks or Torbjorns. And yes, it will be 6v6, though Blizzard says it's unrelated to its experiment with bringing the format back to Overwatch 2. See, now, Overwatch Classic is separate from our broader 6v6 plans. Classic is meant to be a nostalgic experience, taking heroes, players, and the game back to moments in the game's history for limited time events. The Classic gameplay will largely match up with the original game's mechanics, with characters regaining their original abilities and ultimates charging up much more quickly. Maps like Dorado, Numbani, Route 66, and Watchpoint Gibraltar will retain their changes from Overwatch 2, the reworks that we got to enjoy recently, where they have more cover and just better planning overall to make them more competitive and less exploitative in certain necks of the woods. So they'll keep their changes, including match timing and how elevator platforms work. See, as the event progresses, Blizzard plans to progressively layer in changes, including single hero limits. Future updates will return to popular moments in the game's history, with Blizzard citing the 2017 Moth meta, in which Mercy was one of the most powerful characters, and the triple tank, triple support style of GOATs as two examples. So, like I said at the top of this as a story, I haven't gotten back into it myself. However, E-Single sent me a text. He's expressing interest and getting into this. I'm thinking back to the old days, back to the Junkrat days, back when we used to, every now and then we would get together and swap sticks, play a few hands at your place. So AFC, do you think you're gonna get down on any of this Overwatch Classic over the next 3 weeks? It came out November 12th. So if you're listening to this, it's probably been out for about a week, but still got a couple more. What do you think?
Get down with the get down. You said this is the one where you can like pick whatever characters you want. There's no class limitations. You could have, and you said you can have multiple of the same characters.
Like, yep.
That. Yeah. Nah, I'm not. I'm not fucking with that one.
You don't want to face three Reinhardts.
Yeah, I remember those good old days where there'd be like no healer. I would be the one healer every now and then, and people would just be complaining about the lack of healing while not trying to become healers to balance it out. I just remember those
totally
days.
Totally forgot those feelings whenever you'd start a match, you're like, well, no healer.
Yeah, and then people would just be spamming, I need healing, but not switching to healer. Yeah. So that all that just would. That was so, it was just the worst. And I remember those days, and I wasn't fond of those days. I'm not saying I wasn't fond. I played it. I enjoyed it. But I will say, yeah, I enjoyed the changes. Like, I like the restrictions as far as, like, making sure that certain classes have a quota to meet for the team makeup, having, like, a certain number of healers, a certain number of attackers, and a certain number of tanks. I even enjoy the 5v5 makeup of having one tank. Cause I remember just some of those times where you would have two tanks. It was just out of control. Like you couldn't.
It was a war of attrition.
Yeah. Cause like the tanks would just bully the middle of the field. And then everybody else is just kind of this there, like laying cover fire or healing. It was too chaotic for me. I felt like I enjoy having one less player on the map. So that it's not something that I would go back for nostalgia purposes just to see what that's like, but it wasn't a preference of mine. So yeah, I know it's a thing that people talk about how they love the OG Overwatch, but it's not the OG Overwatch that I think people really love. They love the Overwatch of what it became right before becoming Overwatch 2. Mm-hmm. And so like they look back, but I remember when it first launched, people complained about the lack of modes, the lack of characters, like the people didn't like having multiple of the same characters, like they wanted that structure. So yeah, a lot of those things they got away from, and I think it was just with the changes to certain characters with nerfs and yada yada that soured certain people. But really, I think every change that they made was for the better. But it'll be fun to go in there and just see the chaos, especially the Mercy. One of the things I always think about with Mercy is, if I remember, if you like from what you said correctly, they go back to OG Mercy, so that's where Resurrect is her ultimate.
That master
And
is.
yeah, the Master is. And I remember there was one of my play of the games, because you don't get play of the games with Mercy anymore with just the current layout. And so with that one of my play of the games was, my entire squad got taken out, and I kind of found a back area to like run around where the enemies didn't see me. I go around, sneak around, and I see that one soul to resurrect. I do the pull where I fly over to it, do the mass res, and I end up not, it wasn't the one soul, it was multiple souls. I end up mass resing everybody. They all start just unloading ultimates immediately, clear out the area, because
Damn.
all you're doing is you just need to hold down the point. And so they all release their ultimates so that the entire enemy have to like clear out of the zone that they're trying to capture. That's enough to create enough time to win the map. And then I ended up winning the game by doing that mass res, and I will never forget
Yes.
that, because it was just like you're seeing that replay, seeing the mass res, and then seeing all the votes come in for me after that. I just felt great. Yeah, that's something that you don't really get as anymore with Mercy, even though I do prefer the res with the cooldown, so that you're bringing in people more often as opposed to just waiting for that one big mass res. But it was definitely an eraser of mistakes. It was a way to just cover up any mistakes from your team, because they would all just get destroyed with ultimates, and then you just come in and bring everybody right back after an ultimate cleared out everybody. It was just one of those things that it was demoralizing for the other team, and I did like that psychological advantage of that ultimate with Mercy. So I wouldn't mind seeing it come
Absolutely.
back, but I like the way that things are working right now. How about
Yeah,
yourself?
man. I think it's kind of weird to for people to be this nostalgic about Overwatch 1. It's only what, 8 years? I mean, it's still a pretty long time, but it's only like 8 years, man. And it gets to the rose-tinted glasses phase where, like you were suggesting earlier, where people only remember the things that they liked about the old one, and they don't remember the things that they didn't like. Like when you brought up just having games with no support, I completely forgot about that. And I wouldn't have ever brought it up in a discussion or anything. But now that I'm thinking about it, like that was one of the most annoying things about the game. And then people would be uptight about it. They wouldn't want to be a healer. So you had to be a healer. And it was just, whatever. But we got some folks. They don't just have rose-tinted glasses. They got blood in their
They got shit tinted glasses.
eye. Blizzard's giving us this nostalgia event, but it's not good enough, AMC. It doesn't go far enough, AMC. We got Troll of the Week, Troll of the
Troll of the
Week,
week,
Troll of the
troll of the
Week,
week,
Troll of the
troll of the
Week,
week.
Troll of the Week.
Wait,
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 wait, wait,
wait, wait. Cosby, sweet, wait, wait.
First troll coming sideways at Overwatch Classic. So does this mean that McCree will also come back?
Yeah. Cosby, sweet, 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 sweet.
Sweet, 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 sweet. Next troll
Cassidy.
says, sounds like the new one not doing so well, so they're wheeling out the old one.
Not doing so.
They're gonna bring out the old Overwatch for 3 weeks, and that's gonna make up
Yeah.
for everything. Next troll says, holding the original game hostage as an event in the sequel when you're not able to access the original is a dick move. Next troll says, you mean for a limited time? They're going to let me play the game I paid money for? How generous of them. Next troll says, Overwatch is overrated. It's obligatory at this point. And the last troll says, guess the scam didn't pay off after all.
The scam.
The scam. Or give you a better version of the game and introduce the changes that people begged for, or they were going to get the Irish government involved. Like, geez. Oh, man. These trolls. I mean, clearly not paying attention to the details. It's a limited time event. They aren't holding anything hostage. They're still going to, they still have plans and experiments with 6v6 that they're going to introduce to the game proper at some point. So, oh, you get to, you get your game back. Everybody wanted that 6v6. You're getting a taste. And the real thing is on the way. So, you know what? Take this as a victory. Like, I don't understand how we always get to these points where a developer does something and it's nothing but the negativity and the hatred. It's like, be like this if there was all this 6v6 outcry and they did nothing about it. But they're doing something. They're trying to offer things to people that they want, that they say that they desire and that they enjoyed. And, you know, how interesting would it be if they do all this 6v6 stuff and they come to find out that it's not tracking as well as the 5v5. So it's like, you could be on here belly bitching, or you could be out there playing Overwatch Classic and demonstrating that it's not only something that you enjoyed, but it's something that you still want. Get out there, make your data count. AMC, you got anything for these trolls?
Hey, nah, everything you said is exactly how I feel. It's, hey, now you got it. Enjoy it. Play the shit out of it. Maybe Blizzard sees something there. They might compromise, fit in a 6v6 within the current rule set to, for the people who may like that. But yeah, this whole thing of, this thing of where we go back and forth with Blizzard ruins their games or Blizzard makes their games incredible when it comes to Diablo, like just going back and forth. They know what they're doing. Stop holding. I mean, it's good to, you know, stay on top of Blizzard, but this thing of where we need to constantly hold Blizzard's foot to the fire so that they'll make the things that we want. But yet, like, so apparently they can't do anything right, but yet we buy all their games and it's all we discuss whenever they drop something new. Yeah, people need to get themselves in check when it comes to
topping the charts.
Yeah.
All the hours, doing all the numbers, breaking records. Can't do anything right. I'm going to go play Overwatch.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I got for them, A-Dub. Let's take a break and we will come back with our next topic of the week.
Troll of the week.
Troll of the week. We are back, A-Dub, with the next topic of the week.
Topic of the week.
This one from Rolling Stone, A-Dub. Article is, Xbox CEO says there will definitely be future consoles. Souls. So, you know, last week, I believe you had a story where Sony promised, Todoroki promised that PlayStation will continue to make single player games. So I guess there's a trend where console manufacturers have to reassure their base that they can get what they want moving forward. So now Sony said that they're going to continue to make single player games. Xbox has to reassure people that they're going to continue to make consoles. So here we go with the Rolling Stone article. So your boy Phil Spencer, he's been out here. He was with Bloomberg. I guess he was also at Rolling Stone this week. Speaking about consoles, Spencer said that he loves that people are buying Xbox hardware, but notes that it isn't a growth market. Our biggest growth in Xbox players is on PC and cloud. The console space all up isn't growing across all of them. We love those customers, but in terms of continuing to expand and grow Xbox, it's about PC, it's about cloud, and it's about making our games more available in more places. Let's see. In regard to whether the company's emphasis on cloud streaming and anywhere devices means that they'll cease developing new home consoles, Spencer had a definitive answer. We'll definitely do more consoles in the future and other devices. Other devices points to, you know, the confirmation that they do have a handheld eventually coming down the line, or at least they're in the works of making one. So that's what they mean by other devices. Let's see, asked about whether there will be a mid-cycle hardware refresh like Sony has with the recently released PlayStation 5 Pro. He doesn't give a clear answer, but implies that it isn't necessary given the diminishing returns developers are seeing with increased horsepower. So, A-Dub, what do you think about Xbox's commitment to continue to make consoles moving forward? And then, you know, their reason for not wanting to do a pro version of the Xbox Series X, given that they're seeing that there isn't a huge increase, that there's diminishing returns in horsepower for developers as you do these iterative consoles.
I mean, it didn't stop them from making the One X last generation. So maybe they learned some lessons there. I fully support a platform holder not doing iterative like hardware releases, because that helps to erode the sense of what a console is, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm sure people disagree. You can email us at controlissuespod@gmail.com. Tell me how wrong I am. But yeah, man, I support it. I think it's a good move. And I hope this means that, you know, since they won't be planning for those kinds of releases, then that means they'll be putting more thought and innovation and future-proofing their actual console releases. Like, I'm looking forward to what the next Xbox might be capable of, because I didn't have some mid-gen refresh that kind of takes a step toward that. And just, you know, let the console be what the console is, and it just get them on the next one. So I want to see that third generation vapor chamber and what we're doing. So yeah, I support this message. AMC, how about yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, the two things. Yeah, the guarantee that they still have consoles coming. One, they can always just change their mind. Satya can be like, nah,
yeah,
you're done. And then
you get your handheld and then you get out.
Yeah. So you always have to like take these things with a grain of salt, the promises, because really it's the decision makers. If they see that the value isn't there where they thought it would be for the company, they could force them to make a pivot. And so you never really can fully take it as a guarantee, but I do believe that Xbox is going to, you know, I believe Xbox is going to do another Xbox next generation, and then we'll see after that. As he did say, the growing base is in PC, and maybe that's where, you know, the connection with the handheld and not necessarily Switch, but the them keeping an eye on the success of the PC handhelds, so like, you know, the Steam Decks and the ROG Allies that we were talking about earlier, that is a sign as you're seeing PC growth. And also what we were what I would want to see from the handheld, not just solely being an Xbox console, but something that does a little bit more like a PC handheld, but just with the console built into the handheld. So all those things are kind of implying that they're seeing that, you know, just the console isn't enough in itself. And we've seen this somewhat in the past from Xbox, you know, when they, you know, tried to lean into, you know, the TV aspect of the console that people rejected. They're always trying to see that, you know, that the Xbox, that consoles are a lot more than, you know, just gaming like platforms. And yeah, so I can see them trying to like play around with that and seeing where it could grow. And so yeah, like but they do need to continue to make consoles, especially with the fact that just the, I think with the digital libraries, it's something that, you know, you would have to figure that whole situation out with your console base. And, you know, that would cause an uproar of levels that I would not want to see as of right now, with people like, what the hell is going to happen to everything that I bought? There's no more consoles to like play that on. So yeah, there's a little incentive there, and I'm sure there's still value there. It's just a matter of how much they put into that, or like as far as a research standpoint. But I do like the idea that they are, one, leaning into still doing more consoles, and then two, what was the second part about? Oh yeah, not wanting to do like a pro version of the Xbox. Like, so he did say like he thought that there is, you know, they're seeing less of a drop off, and you know that's even something that we've seen as far as comments as we go from generation to generation. Like, the jump from Nintendo to SNES to N64 isn't the same as what we saw. And, when we saw the reveal of the PlayStation 5, and they're like, look at old games and then look at the enhanced games. And, for the super tech guys, they're like, oh, like I can, they'll call out, like, if you look at the sign off in the distance in this game, it's just blurry. And in this game, you can completely read it, or look at the trees and the details on the trees in the distance as opposed to how they are currently. But then there are a lot of people who are watching that stream, and they're just like, it's not translating. Like, especially for the $700 value, it's just not translating the upgrade to make it worth the value, or at least the price that they're trying to offer for it. And so I definitely see that from myself personally. Like, I don't when I wasn't necessarily interested in the PS4 Pro, but seeing the PS5 Pro, they're def like I'm totally happy with my console. And it didn't seem like there was a huge improvement in a way where it's like, now that all the issues that we have on the PS5 games and how they run, they're now just suddenly running completely differently, a lot better, and all those things that would fix maybe some of the gripes that people have about games. And we'll see, maybe as more games get like 60 frames per second, and maybe the PS5 only has 30 frames, if that becomes a thing, that might be something that pushes people over. But I know people make a lot, like, make a big deal about frame rates, but if they're not willing to jump to the pro version to like get everything that they can, at least as far as like the ray tracing and all that stuff, it's showing that there might be a drop off as far as like what people say that they want versus what they're willing to pay for. So it makes sense to not necessarily have to not put out a pro version if you don't really see the value there. And as you said, they put out that 1X, and maybe they just saw like the sales for it, and they're just like, not worth it. Just save our money, and we could just put more money into the next console when that time comes. Or in this case, put it into the handheld, something different from the console that, seeks a different value proposition for, an underserved part of their consumer base. So with that, they have all the numbers, and I definitely I agree with this line of thinking as far as the pro versions. And yeah, they have to put out another console because it would create a shitstorm that I don't want to see right now. So that's what I got with that story, A-Dub. Do you have anything else before we move on to the next topic?
I think we're just in an awkward phase in gaming right now, where just the industry itself has reached kind of a critical mass where it needs to figure out how it's going to navigate its way through the future, or it needs to downscale. But like, I don't know, I'm thinking back to your remark about people freaking out about, oh, what am I going to do with my library if we ever reach a point where there just aren't consoles anymore? And honestly, I don't see a future without consoles of some kind in some form. Like, there has to be a device that plays games. We're too deep. It's like, if you aren't going to be providing these boxes just as, a company pushing new technology to play new content on, then there has to be other companies that are going to make their third party, like off-brand emulator type boxes, so that you could at least play stuff, or maybe like even some way of having some access to the content of the stores. Like, I have a story here in our next topic of the week, topic of the week, where CD Projekt's good old games, GOG, they have begun a preservation program to ensure the longevity of video games in general. But they're starting with a list of over 100 games. Let's see, the blurb says, the GOG preservation program is our commitment to preserving gaming history. Through the program, players can trust that their games will always be up to date and ready to run on current and future PC setups. Whether it's manuals, DLCs, or missing features, we're offering the most complete version possible, backed by GOG's tech support and offline installers, so you can safeguard these classics for years to come. It goes on to say that in a world of rapid technological change, we see the urgent need to save video games from vanishing. The GOG preservation program is committed to keeping beloved classics alive and playable for future generations. Our goal is for all games with a recent War Classic to eventually become part of the preservation program. For a game to qualify, our team must run it through many quality tests. If these tests fail, our team updates and improves the games until it matches our quality standards. Only then we stamp the game with our preservation program and grant it good old game status. So yeah, they put out a list. He's like a total of 108 games that are already in the preservation program, including Dragon Age Origins, System Shock 2, Elder Scrolls Morrowind, Legacy of Kain Defiance, Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor, Resident Evil 2 and 3, as well as Mad Max. And they're going to add more to that list over time. So, you know, with efforts like this, of course, Microsoft has their own effort in preserving games and making backwards compatibility a primary focus of their business model. AMC, do you think this bodes well for the future of consoles as well as gaming in general?
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking up right now. One, that's good initiative that they're doing, especially with PC, just because, you know, PCs keep getting better, but you have to adapt all the data in order to be able to run properly on a newer console. Like, it's not like the PCs just can run all old shit, like, either better or just as they were. And so I like that there is an effort to make sure that all those old games are preserved in that way. And yeah, I was just looking up PlayStation 5 sold, and there's 65 million out there, and that's just PS5. That doesn't count Xbox, doesn't count Nintendo. So, you know, even if they're not seeing a ton of growth from a player base, that's still over 100 million people that are willing to buy consoles. So it's like something that, like, you know, a business isn't just going to overlook. Like, we're just going to let those hundred millions of customers, like, go by the wayside. If anything, we've seen just, it's too much of a rapid expansion within the industry of gaming, because, you know, more players come in that want to make games, they're hiring more people, and then, you know, they're not seeing the same returns on those games. And it's because there's just so many games to play, and, you know, and not everybody's buying them. And so, like, as you said, if anything, there's too much expansion from an industry standpoint that's not meeting, and the customers aren't meeting that demand. And so the industry itself is going to have to kind of, you know, what we usually see is consolidation, but it's going to have to kind of adjust from their own perspective to kind of figure that situation out. Or they go to other areas like mobile, and as I said, PC, which, like Phil Spencer was just talking about. Mm-hmm. But I don't think consoles will ever go away, because there's always going to be a community to serve. And as long as there's a community to serve, some business is going to be there to, you know, to be there and provide for them. And also, who knows, this could be a trend. Like, these things can go in waves. Like, just other things like wrestling and whatnot, like, it has ebbs and flows, where it's really popular and then it's not popular, and then it suddenly comes back, and it's going to be on, what, Netflix next year, and might see a huge explosion again of within an audience back to the days of The Rock and Stone Cold. And so with gaming, yeah, like, it, there might be a trend right now towards PC, but then maybe there's one, a nostalgia fueled like a resurgence from people wanting to just have consoles. Also, aging consumers isn't necessarily a bad thing, because that's just more disposable income. And so, you know, you just might see an older audience in the console space, but an older audience that has a ton of money to spend on games. And so then you just completely just milk those cows or those whales as it is. Like, the other thing I was thinking about, like, the other day, was just the idea of, like, how much people, you know, complain about accessibility and whatnot in games. And just the idea that, say, the gaming base does continue to age, those people who complain about accessibility and whatnot are going to need that to play the games as their dexterity starts to decline. And so, it's one of those things that, like, I think as long as there are people who are willing to play games and, you know, introducing their kids to the games, it's going to be there. And so I don't think it's going to go away. I know people are, it's just one of those things that, like, people are concerned about, but I don't think it's necessarily in the cards for the future as far as, like, it being glass half full. Like, I would still look glass half or glass half empty. I'd still look glass as full as far as consoles and the future of gaming. And so, yeah, I'm not too worried about it, and I'm happy that, you know, GOG is continuing to try to keep everything going and preserved moving forward.
To preserve our legacy.
Legacies.
Legacy AMC.
All right, I am in quick hit mode, A-Dub. Let's see. This is coming from Polygon. The Game Awards confirms that DLC, so mainly Elden Ring, but Elden Ring and any DLC is Game of the Year eligible. Well,
oh, they extended it to any.
Yes. So Jeff Keighley, Jeff Keighley and company have issued a clarification on nominees' eligibility. Although previously the rules did not explicitly forbid video game DLCs and expansions from nominations, some may have erroneously assumed that DLCs wouldn't be in contention for these awards. In the update posted today to the FAQ on the Game Awards website, there's a new question: are DLC expansion packs and remakes, remasters eligible? And here's the answer. The Game Awards aims to recognize the best creative and technical work each year, irrespective of the format of that content's release. Expansion packs, new game seasons, DLCs, remakes, and remasters are eligible in all categories if the jury deems the new creative and technical work to be worthy of a nomination.
That's factors, a fair caveat.
Yeah. Factors such as the newness of the content and its price and value should be taken into consideration. This is from Polygon. Previously, we might have predicted seeing Elden Ring and Best Ongoing Game, the place that the parent games for exceptional DLCs and expansions tend to get nominated, thereby serving as a way for those additions to be recognized. Now it could end up anywhere, where. So A-Dub, what do you think about this idea of DLC being eligible for Game of the Year?
Well, my personal...
And remasters and remakes, but yeah.
I think, yeah, once you extend it all the way out there, the stroke is way too broad. But it's that caveat that gives it some level of credence, where as long as the jurors feel that the offering is worthy of note in that manner. Because while I don't believe that DLCs in general should be eligible for Game of the Year, because by and large, they aren't new games. They're just, it's, you know, can I get an extra patty on my burger, like, kind of thing. But to be fair, though, there are some companies that go above and beyond the standard of what DLC is or is conceived as. I mean, for instance, The Witcher, Blood and Wine, Cyberpunk, Phantom Liberty, Rockstar with the Red Dead Redemption, Undead Nightmare. You know, there are developers and there are DLCs that are pretty much in their own right, their own games. In fact, Undead Nightmare, Infamous First Light, those were standalone DLCs that you didn't even need the original game to play. So, you know, there's a blurry line where DLC and a actual release meets up. And like, this is the kind of future that I envisioned way back when, where you don't have to buy a sequel just to get a few new levels and, you know, a couple new skins. Instead, that stuff can just be added to the game. So, you know, it's murky territory, but, you know, I will push myself to the back and just look at this from a, you know, just from a more like open-minded perspective, where it makes sense. Because, you know, you got to give From Software their credit for Shadow of the Erdtree. You got to give CD Projekt their credit for Phantom Liberty. If they can make add-on content that goes above and beyond what other developers' full releases bring to the table, then they have every right to receive the highest honors in that respect. So, yeah, that's where I stand on it. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because as I was looking at it this year, I think I remember I said at some point, I was like, man, I feel like Vessel of Hatred might be the best thing that I played this year. And like, I think that's where it comes into play. It's like up to the voter. And that if something was, if there were a bunch of games that came out and yet you're like, but this DLC was the best bit of content that I played throughout the entire year, in comparison to all these new games, like I totally don't fault a person for saying this was the best thing. Like, I wanting to recognize that this was the best thing that I played this year. Like, and so I completely get it. I wonder if like it would extend, like if somebody was like, this Battle Pass Like this return to Overwatch 6v6 was the greatest thing I played this year. I'm giving that game of the year. Like that this seasonal update, that'd be hilarious. But yeah, I have no issue with that at all. It's worth a remaster. Because I feel like a remaster is literally just the same game, just like updated. Like a remake is one thing because it's like, like you're taking it and you're the things you can do with the controls and the changes you could do to the game make it feel completely fresh. I mean, you look at Final Fantasy and they completely changed up certain characters that shouldn't be around in the game are in later games. It's are in later parts of the game. So like I would totally see like Final Fantasy Remake being eligible for a Game of the Year like nomination. And so yeah, it's I'm a little more loose with that if it's definitely something that's notable. Erdtree was one of those things that like a lot of people talk about. Like this is a completely whole new game technically that they just dropped in here, and it is. It's like a new space. It's not like you're necessarily traveling through the main world. You're going to a new place, and it's like it has its own set of rules. And you're from what I remember, like you couldn't grind your way up for Shadow of the Erdtree. Like there's still resources that you need to collect within that to become more powerful. So you can like game the system with Shadow of the Erdtree. And so yeah, I think they're. I totally agree that certain things are totally eligible if they do enough to change what was from the original, or as you said, like just provide so much newness. Like I would, wow, like I would even consider the Cyberpunk update as like if people wanted to nominate that at that time
Oh,
as Game of
the
the Year.
2.0 update
Yeah,
with the
because
overhaul of all the systems.
the overhaul and just everything that came with like the update over time, just because of the fact that what originally came out of the game was definitely not Game of the Year contention. But then I hear people with the 2.0 saying this is one of my favorite games of all time now. So it's like it's if you wanted to recognize that change in the game from a game that was just broken, buggy, and unplayable to one of the best experiences that I will ever have in a video game. Like I totally understand somebody wanting to acknowledge that as well. So yeah, I'm totally loose for, or at least yeah, I'm op I'm I have an openness to people's openness to interpretation when it comes to these rules and what they will decide to voting for Game of the Year. That's all I got there to do. Do you have any other quick hits?
Real quick one, an update on the Stellar Blade Nier Automata crossover content. The DLC will be
Yeah,
released on November 20th.
that naked suit.
And much to my surprise, I thought it was just going to be like just one skin of that main character from Nier, but it looks like it's multiple skins, and there's even a skin of one of the other characters in the game, which was my personal favorite. I haven't played the game, but I've seen stuff. And yeah, man, looking forward to this. It's also coming with that photo mode, so the internet's gonna be a racy place for a little while. But yeah, man, Stellar Blade's awesome. This content looks great. Looks like a lot of love and detail went into implementing this into the game. I'm excited. I still need to go back and beat Stellar Blade, AMC. You gotta get into it, or
No, no, not
you
at all.
still abstaining.
I'm still abstaining. It's not a game that I need, or that I
I don't
necessarily.
know that combat system, man.
I'm sure it's great, but yeah, just not one of those things that I need in my life right now. It wasn't one of those games that I was like, oh, I need something that's a break from all these political influence games that. Or a throwback. Like I got that in Space Marine was my, oh, this feels like a throwback type of game because it's just,
Does A-Dub have to get Space Marine?
I love it, but there's so many games they'd have to play, but I truly enjoy Space Marine and I love Warhammer. So I would totally recommend it, but it just depends on where you're at. Loop Hero looks absolutely awesome. So maybe after that,
I'm
if you got
loving the
nothing
hell
else
out of
going
that.
on.
Well, man, I mean, I gotta play Dave. I gotta finish Dredge. I gotta finish Stellar Blade, Baldur's Gate, Legendary Edition of Mass Effect, at some point, Fallout 4. Like The Witcher, I'm thinking about firing that up. The Phantom Liberty DLC, so I can see what the fuss is about. God, that game is so good. There's a I got a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot on your plate. And so yeah, that's why like for me, like yeah, for me personally, like, I don't need to play the game. And I'm not taking anything away from it. I know people enjoyed it. I just didn't, you know, it was that whole thing of like, oh, this is everything that I wanted. This is what everything I've been asking for that I haven't been getting served in video gaming. Like I that part like totally rubbed me the wrong way. And then just, you know, just the game itself, like it's I have my souls, and that's kind of all I need from that space. I'm not sure if this is like, you know, purely like a souls style of game, but from
It's
an
very
action,
Souls light.
yeah, from an action combat standpoint, I got that, and I'm kind of good there. Like I'm getting my needs met. So no, it's not enough to get me in. I've actually been interested in playing Nier Automata just because of everything I heard
Same.
about the game, the uniqueness of the needing to replay it to like really learn everything in the loop and discovering things as you're playing it through the second time that you didn't get in the first playthrough. All of that stuff, just from a game design standpoint, intrigued me. But this game, I don't know if that type of discussion was there with sorry, what was the game we're talking about again? Yeah.
Stellar Blade.
With Stellar Blade, yeah. And so yeah, it's just not one of those ones that I have to play. I did hear it's coming to PC though, like at least in
Yes,
America.
and
So,
that's gonna be a
oh,
thing.
yeah. So people are gonna be modding the shit out of
I just want to
that.
see CJ and Homer Simpson.
So, yeah, naked seizure.
Yes,
Yeah.
but just a little more detail on the release to kind of expound on how I was feeling about being surprised by how much stuff is in it. A handful of screenshots show Nier Automata protagonist 2B in the world of Stellar Blade, alongside the iconic but bizarre Emile. The blurb goes on to say, Emile Shop makes a surprise appearance in the world of Stellar Blade, where 11 different collaboration special items will be available. Items that intertwine the best of both games, leading you to a more enriched world. And then, like, I'm looking through the photo gallery, like, I'm seeing like three or four different outfits and the different character from Nier. Like, this for just being a content collab, this might be a much needed shot in the arm for Stellar Blade. I know it did well commercially for Shift Up and Sony's relationship. So looking forward to a sequel at some point, even though I know that they're moving on to a new IP after Stellar Blade, but at least they're hanging around long enough to continue to enrich the game with additional goodness. So, yeah.
I don't have any more quick hits. Do you have anything else, A-Dub?
That's all I got, my man.
All right, do you have any final words before we get out of here?
Any final words of what's coming up? I mean, we're getting closer to the holidays, you know, you want to embrace the togetherness and being thankful, being grateful for the things you have. It's one of the best times to be a gamer. So you can appreciate that. Maybe when you're going around the table putting gravy on your dressing, you can mention that, and that's something you can have that nobody else can take away from you. So, you know, get ready for your time off, get ready for your bonuses, get ready for your Christmas money, get your Christmas list ready, make sure you're being nice to everybody in your circle, and enjoy yourself.
Hell yeah. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AEC.
And this is A-Dub. We are Control Machines. Thanks for playing, sucker.